Amina is an activist during the Arab Spring. Her blog, Gay Girl in Damascus, attracts readers from around the world. When she's mysteriously abducted, her followers mobilize, desperate to save her. What they find shocks them. I'm Samira Moyeddin, the host of Gay Girl Gone, a new 6-part series from CBC. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm 36, and I spent the majority of my life after 10 with this notion that I would be dead by 30.
Jeremy Saunders has cystic fibrosis. It is a genetic disease that cuts many lives short. But now there is a medication that is making a dramatic difference for people living with the disease.
It's hard to put into words how drastically that pill had an effect on my physical body. It's truly astronomical.
Jeremy is from Halifax, and like a lot of Canadians, he has access to the drug Trikafta. But in many other parts of the world, the drug is either not available, or if it is, it costs $300,000 a year to treat just one person. Cherry Nell is one of about 700 people in South Africa living with cystic fibrosis. And she is suing Vertex, the American pharmaceutical company that makes Trikafta, over its patent and price tag. Cherry, hello.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Tell me, what is it like? What is your day-to-day like living with cystic fibrosis?
So, because the biggest impact of cystic fibrosis is the mucus in our bodies are just more and more sticky, I think the biggest impact on a day-to-day basis is on the lungs. So, we're quite cautious, cystic fibrosis people. We call ourselves CFs. So CFs are quite cautious with regards to being exposed to germs. I think you have to be really, really cautious to not catch any form of virus or bacteria, because once that happens, you're kind of on your back foot already with the excess mucus in your lungs, and it can very quickly cause your lungs to deteriorate to a point where it's unable to bounce back. So I think I can summarize it as a general high level of almost walking on eggshells the whole time.
And what did you know or what do you know about your life expectancy?
So look, it's a number, it's a statistic. I think every year it goes up. And it's obviously based on the average of people living with cystic fibrosis. And now that a lot of people, CFs in the world, have got access to this drug, the expectancy has gone up, the average expectancy. But for people who don't have access, I think the life expectancy is still short. I mean, like under 40 years. I think CF is the genetic disease with the highest mortality in children.
And so when you heard about this breakthrough medication, that was about 5 years ago that we learned of this, what was your reaction? Did you think your life would change, that you would have access?
Oh, absolutely. I think at the time it was a medical and scientific breakthrough. It was absolutely world-class. It was as close to a cure. And everyone thought that this disease is going to be turned on its head with almost immediate effect.
And so what is the difference with this medication versus the other ones we've had previously?
So this is a medication that actually for the first time corrects the underlying genetic mutation. In other words, the genetic fault of cystic fibrosis. So it literally corrects that fault at a cellular level. And that causes all the other symptoms to kind of be much less significant or completely fall away. And if you are started on this medication at a very young age, I mean, like, I think at the moment it's approved for children up to 2 years. If you are below 2 years old and you can even start that medication, then, I mean, you are as close to guaranteed of a normal life. There's no lung fibrosis. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Phenomenal, but then you go to try to get access to this drug, and what happens?
Absolutely. So the thing is, in first world countries where you have a national healthcare system that has got deep pockets, they are able to strong arm the biotech companies such as Vertex and maybe cut a deal with them to give them the medication at a lower price, maybe not at $300,000, maybe at $200,000. Those deals are always behind closed doors. But in third world countries where we don't have a national healthcare system that is that rich and that able to actually have that negotiating power. Those deals doesn't happen. And as a result, the medication is not available in South Africa. And the sad thing is that Vertex has gone and registered its patents in almost every country in the world. And it's rightly entitled to do so. But now there's a generic available in Argentina, and we actually can't import it into countries like South Africa because the patent is registered here. So they're effectively holding us ransom.
But you have managed to access it through what's available in Argentina, I understand.
Correct. So it's what we call a buyer's club, where you get people together and every once in a while someone flies over to Argentina, get the medication there at a pharmacy, like for 6 months, fly back with it in their suitcases. Up till now, we haven't had any problems at customs and with the South African healthcare authority, products healthcare authority. They've all approved it. But technically, we're guilty of patent infringement because in terms of South African law, when you register a patent, then no one else is allowed to use the medication, distribute, dispense, sell anything. So if I use the medication in South Africa, I'm technically guilty of patent infringement.
And so you're taking it. Yeah. And so how do you feel now that you've had access? And I don't know if you're taking it at the dose that would be recommended or if you're doing kind of a patchwork system, but what is the effect?
It is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, you cannot imagine what a pill can do. I took the pill. Just before I took the pill, I measured my lung function. I think it was 84%, which is absolutely amazing, and I'm very grateful for it, but it's 84% is great for someone with cystic fibrosis. Took the pill 48 hours later, measured it again. I didn't do anything, just took the pill, 105%. It's absolutely life-changing. You don't feel tired, you're less fatigued, you have much more energy, and you almost realize that, oh, this is what people actually normally feel like. So it's literally, I mean, it has picked people up from death's door. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. With a price tag of more than $300,000 a year, it's not something anyone out of their own pocket can probably afford. So what have you chosen to do? I understand you're taking Vertex to court. How is that playing out?
Yes. So in February last year, I filed an application. So in South African courts, you get either an action or an application. Anything in relation to patent law is an application. So you apply to the High Court to say, High Court, I think that Vertex, and I allege that Vertex is guilty of patent abuse, because in terms of the South African Patents Act, when you get the benefit of a patent, i.e. the protection, that no one else will come and, you know, sell and make profits from this medication or copy or recipe, you have an obligation to effectively make the patent or the product available to the Republic on reasonable terms. Now, first of all, Vertex hasn't made that product available in South Africa. It hasn't registered the product here. And second of all, even if they do, $300,000 is definitely not reasonable, especially if it costs them $5,000 per annum to make the drug.
Which is a number that has been reported, is that right?
Yes. So as part of my papers, I had to include various witnesses. And actually, my economic expert witness was from Canada, and he assisted in determining the price of actually making the drug. So I'm taking them to court and say they're guilty of patent abuse. Then you effectively ask the court, listen here, they're guilty of patent abuse. They're not making the drug available. There's this other generic from Argentina that's much cheaper. Grant us a compulsory license, which effectively entitles us to import the generic. So that's what we're asking in the South African courts.
You know, Vertex did send us a statement. Part of it says, and I quote, "We believe that Cherry Nell's action is misguided given the complexity of the South African healthcare system. We do not believe that the grant by accord of a compulsory license will lead to broad, sustainable, and accelerated access to Trikafta for patients. Access to the medicines will remain restricted until the regulatory reimbursement barriers to access for innovative rare disease medicines in South Africa have been removed." And we don't have a lot of time left, but I am curious, how do you respond to that statement from Vertex?
I think I have a rock solid open and shut case in terms of the South African Patents Act. That's quite an interesting statement to hear. I really think if once I get a compulsory license, and we have now gone to a point where we're literally onboarding all the other CF patients in the country to be co-applicants. So we're all asking for a compulsory license. So there's merit and weight in numbers of people. So I actually think I would respectfully disagree with that statement.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Cherry Nell is a South African woman who has cystic fibrosis. Dr. Chris Agape-Aja is a global health policy strategist on advancing equity in the African continent. And he joins me now from London, England. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Doctor, you know, Cherry says she has a solid rock case. Do you agree? I mean, what do you think? Does this make its way through the courts in a way that she would be happy about?
I think the analysis are quite straightforward. If the law within the country where the patent is being established has those established guidelines, like she has mentioned, then it deserves fair hearing. And I think that, you know, they should be granted permission to assess this treatment.
Mm-hmm. What do you think her story says about healthcare equity in Africa?
I think it's a very interesting case, and it shows that we still have a long way to go. I think for starters, this isn't even something she should be defending as a patient alone, right? I think what really even raises concerns for me is why it's something she as a patient or other cystic fibrosis patients have to put a case together to go, you know, request for access to this kind of medication. We need to develop our strategy as a continent as a whole. And, you know, even in third world countries, there should be bodies that are established that they can go bring this case to and say, OK, this is the challenge we are facing. And then as a body or as a continent, we have a unified approach to tackle these things. Right. While the laws on patent use and all of those things are established, of course, to protect the pharmaceuticals, as it were, we know that equity and access is not evenly distributed. And so we need to have those bodies that we can approach those leaders and you know, establish frameworks that, you know, when these kind of cases arise, patients can go say, this is our challenge. This is what we are this is what we are facing. And we are sure that we have that kind of defense to protect that interest. So it does raise a lot of questions along those lines.
You know, Vertex will say it spent 20 years doing research to develop this drug. In a statement, it said, quote, "We believe in the importance of upholding intellectual property rights as this enables companies like Vertex to invest 70% of our operating expenses to discover, develop, and bring new medicines to patients." This is always the argument. Is it a valid one, do you think?
It's valid in some cases, but even the WTO does recognize instances where patents, patent agreements can be reviewed or exceptions be made. And one of those instances are where the public health is being concerned, is being affected, right? So, and I believe that this fits into one of those cases where adjustments should be made or should be considered, right? And then it also, you know, if you look at it on the larger scheme of things, this is not the first time Vertex is having this kind of challenge. They've had a similar challenge with one of their drugs in time past, and where the legal, you know, concessions dragged on for a long time. I think this was in the UK, and they had to destroy about 8,000 of the drugs they had produced because, you know, they didn't have that go ahead to you know, release that medication. So if you look at it critically, it doesn't really do well for the pharmaceutical companies in the long run if you keep having legal challenges after the release of your drug. One of the things also that she mentioned that we need to look at is that the profit margin is astronomical. If it's costing you $5,000 to produce and you're charging at $300,000 for people to assess it, then that is beyond reasonable frameworks. And so there are exceptions where this patent should be waived. And I think this falls into one of those cases. And the last point I'll say is that it leads to a larger question of who are the people funding the research into these new drugs and what is the goal. We know that in healthcare, profit maximization can't be at the forefront all the time because, you know, there's really no value to human life. And so we need to look at more ethical ways of funding research for, you know, new drugs that actually are focused on, you know, improving the healthcare of the people that are most affected.
And just to be clear, when we're talking about patents, the sort of the international laws around how long they're protected, they open up after 20 years. Is that right? I mean, we're talking about trying to get to them, opening them up sooner. Do I have that right?
Yes, yes, yes. So the generally it's stated that it's after 20 years we have international frameworks like the TRIPS agreements that guide those things. So we are saying, okay, can it be opened sooner or at least be given a discount? A discount also doesn't mean that you don't make your profit. It just means that it may take a while for those profits to be established. And, you know, one of the challenges that she highlighted was in, you know, first world countries, you have national health frameworks that are making these negotiations. But this is not the case in Africa and a lot more developing clients. So if we can't have the patents removed sooner, can we have, you know, these drugs discounted such that you would make your profit back? It's just that it may take a longer time than you envisage. And so this still brings back to the point of having strong institutional actors and frameworks that can make these negotiations to ensure that, you know, the lives of people and the interests of the patients that need this, you know, are protected.
Right. So rather than go through a court case to try to free up the patent, is there not a better way on the front end with these international laws that they could somehow be changed so that we don't end up in this situation in the first place?
Yes, that's my thoughts on this, and which was why I was saying that it's actually even heartbreaking that it's a patient that is taking this on. You understand what I'm saying? So we need to have those bodies that can be the face of the interest of patients, because today is cystic fibrosis, tomorrow it could be something else, it could be cancer, it could be any disease. And so would we keep having cases for every time, you know, there's a new innovation in therapeutics and then it's overpriced and we can't assess it? So we need to have that representation that adequately, you know, makes the defends these policies and ensure that the policies and the interpretation of them, especially in low and middle income countries, are equitable and give people access to healthcare.
And what else could African governments do, those in developing countries who find themselves in this situation?
We need to begin to promote intentionally homegrown research, homegrown innovation into, you know, development of treatment and cures that are, you know, applicable to the African context, right? And also when, as African health leaders and, you know, governments and stakeholders in these spaces, when we are looking for, you know, grants and incentives and fundings of that sort, we should ensure that these things are being tailored to the areas of specific need, of major need. And I think that vaccine manufacturing, drug manufacturing remains one significant gap that we still have on the continent. The Africa CDC, for example, we know is trying to make some strides in that area, establishing in terms of vaccines, right? Establishing vaccine manufacturing centers within the continent. And we can extend this to drugs as well. But we need to start intentionally ensuring that we can, you know, create some of these solutions within the continent, which I believe will reduce the cost of the therapeutics at the end of the day.
Okay. Dr. Chris Agape Aja, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Chris Agape Aja is a global health policy specialist.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
There are at least 4,300 Canadians living with cystic fibrosis. A growing number are taking Trikafta. Kelly Grover is the president and CEO of Cystic Fibrosis Canada. Good morning.
Good morning.
How is Trikafta changing the lives of people in this country?
Well, no one could say it better than Jeremy did. It is drastically changing their lives. It is, he called it astronomical. That's what we hear from people within a couple hours of taking it. Sherry talked about this, about how transformational. They breathe different. They run up the stairs. They're not coughing at night. Their spouses are saying, "What's going on? You're not coughing." It's a game changer for our community, and we're thrilled that it's here in Canada.
And how available is it to Canadians?
Well, you know, when I listened to the story in South Africa, we feel very lucky. So I just want to say that first off. In Canada, though, we have a number of challenges that remain. We do have approval of Trikafta in Canada. the way we're set up in Canada to have our drugs paid for, there's sort of two systems. One is in the private sector. So for those of us who have our employer pay for our drugs, there are limits to that. There's no guarantee that your private insurer covers Trikafta. And if they do, they may have annual maximums that they'll pay, or they may have lifetime. And that causes a ton of stress for our community. So if they're not on private insurance or there's limitations, then they're on our public system. And while our public system negotiates broadly with the manufacturer, when it comes to rolling the drug out, it's by our 13 jurisdictions. So our 10 provinces and our 3 territories. Letters of agreement have to be signed with the manufacturer with each jurisdiction. So that can slow. You can have approval in Alberta and not have approval in Nova Scotia. So we see big gaps there in terms of equity, but also the payment or the reimbursement by the province for your drugs is very different depending on where you live. There's about 6 provinces who charge you money. Some people call it a deductible or a co-payment, and that can range. So if you make $25,000, you would pay up to $1,800, from $200 to $1,800. And if you make $125,000 as a family, you're going from $850 to $8,800. We just think this is unacceptable. When you are talking about Trikafta, you're talking about a life-changing, life-transformational drug. This isn't just your average drug we're talking about. And so what we see with the financial burden is we have families fundraising to pay for the drug. We have families sharing the medication kind of on a so-called black market. And that is just unacceptable when you've got such an amazing drug.
And I understand it's rolling out differently in the provinces about how, at what age you can have access to it as well, right?
Well, it's approved for age 2 and up right now. So it has been approved by our different bodies for age, as I said, 2 and up. But right now, it was approved, I think, about 3 months ago in Alberta, but we have yet to hear confirmation in the Northwest Territories. So if you are a parent of a child in the Northwest Territories and you know that this is a progressive disease, and as your previous speaker said, you want to get kids on it sooner than later because of the progressive nature of the disease, it's very, very stressful for them. And that's if you have the mutation that it's approved for. And it's not all mutations it's approved for right now, which is another gap.
How do you want Health Canada to handle this file right now then?
So that is a really good question. Right now, Health Canada accepts clinical trials as the gold standard for evidence. When you have a rare mutation in a rare disease, you're talking very small numbers and you can't run a trial. So what you can do, though, with Trikafta is it can be tested in the lab. The lab can test the cells and it can predict the benefit or the impact of Trikafta. And there's a number of people. We've got about coverage for about 90% of people in Canada. It could be beneficial to about 95%. So if Health Canada accepted lab data as legitimate, then we would see more coverage. And there's a lot of families who would benefit from that.
So you're saying the drug right now, some folks are not eligible for it for one reason or another. It may or may not work or hasn't been proven to work in their case.
Correct.
Gotcha. And just before you go, you know, it's not a magic bullet. There's always areas of research that we're looking to explore further. So what's the next thing that you're looking for just before you go?
Well, we have invested a lot in research over the years. And one of the next horizon is there's even a better Trikafta coming, I understand, but also genetic therapies are on the horizon. And we've seen some of the benefit of that in sickle cell. And that's where the research is at next for cystic fibrosis. And we look forward to even going further for our community.
Okay. Kelly Grover, thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Kelly Grover is the president and CEO of Cystic Fibrosis Canada.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.